With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello there.
And Naomi McLeod.
Hello.
Hello, hello everyone. Hello, dear listener. Welcome back. Welcome to another week, the fourth episode in season three of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. And it's great. I mean, it's the end of January. This is normally when we're the time of year that we're getting NAMM. Obviously, NAMM isn't happening at the moment until whatever, June, something like that. But it doesn't feel like any companies were let know that that was happening because everyone's still releasing everything.
That is true. Although not as extreme as maybe last year or the year before. I think maybe It feels like people are holding back slightly. And, you know, there is, you know, I think they're saying, June for potential re-NAMM. But, yeah, it kind of feels like there's been a few releases, but nothing really under the radar of, like, this is NAMM.
No, if you know what I mean. No, yeah, it's, but it's still. I feel like it's a lot of stuff. In all the time, the decade that we've been doing Guitar Nerds, did you see this recently? Someone on the Guitar Nerds group pointed out that the oldest episode that's on from when it was the GAC Guitar Shop podcast, the oldest episode that's currently available, because I think some of them are dropping off now, you know, because GAC own all of those, so I don't know what they're doing with them. They probably don't have, I don't think I gave them the passwords to the account that so who knows what's happening with them. But the first episodes have gone now, but the oldest episode is something like 9 and a bit years old now, which is pretty frightening. Frightening. And apparently, yeah, someone was listening to it and they were like, it's nothing's changed, Joe's still talking about polymath and fine, yes, I'm just repeating the same stuff every single week for 10 years. But yeah, anyway, my point was, that in all the time we've been doing the podcast, there's always news every week, there's always something new coming out. Like, very rarely are there weeks where there's not at least a few things that are new that we can talk about? Not that we always talk about news, but I certainly always have them in the podcast notes. There's always a bunch of stuff. And towards the end of last year, there was just nothing. There was just nothing for us to add to the list. And this year, you know, I'm looking at our podcast notes right here now. We're not going to get around to these, but there's over 10 new things that we could get involved in. And some of those are umbrellas for complete ranges of things that have come out. So it's good. It's a good time. New
things
stuff.
Are looking up.
Exactly. But yes, well, before, you know, before we get into any of those things, and talking about our Facebook group, Guitar Nerds group on Facebook, I posted the other day, I was selling this pedal, a Hudson Electronic Broadcast. I sold it on my Reverb shop. As listener, I imagine you know, unless you're a new listener, I've been selling through all my stuff to try and get enough money to put a deposit down on a flat. So I've been selling through everything, and I sold my Hudson Broadcast. And you know, I recorded with it quite a lot when my band were at the ranch in Southampton, and then I came. It was listed whilst that happened, and I came back and I was like, you know what, it was really good. I should take it down from the Reverb shop because it is a great pedal. And then the day after, I thought that, and then forgot to take it down. Someone bought it, so I was like, damn, boxed it up, sent it out to them. And then a couple of hours later, I was like, right, it's lunch break. I'm gonna play, you know, I'm gonna make a new little mini board, make some weird sounds. And I saw a Hudson Broadcast on the shelf. I was like, I really freaked out. It's like, what have I sent this guy? And I started even messaging him.
Feeling.
I was like, and it'd already been collected by UPS. So I started messaging the guy, being like, I don't know what you've got, but then. I was looking at the Hudson. I was like, hold on, there's different Velcro on the back of this than there is pictured in the listing. So it's not the same Hudson Broadcast. And we got that Hudson Broadcast 4+ years ago. So so I was like, well, I have owned two for all this time, maybe longer, and not known. And it's really been, I'm like, I can't believe I had two Hudson Broadcasts. But I have actually solved the mystery now. Anyway, that was what I thought for a little while. I realized that the Hudson Broadcast we used at the studio wasn't ours. It was the studio's. I didn't bring mine. So I actually just packed theirs away and took it back with me like a thief. So I had to reach out to them. So I had to reach out to the studio and be like, hi, you're not missing a broadcast. And they were like, oh, God, we really needed that yesterday. And
you were like, well, tough. It's mine now.
Yeah, exactly. So, for anyone who followed that story, I'm not quite as gear obsessed that I actually owned two of the same thing without realizing. There was a completely innocent answer to it.
So. It reminds me of a GAC story, which, Joe, whether you were working there at this point or not, and whether we've talked about this on the podcast before, but there was a great customer that always used to come in, older fella, big, long, sort of like white hair with his partner, and always used to come in, I think probably like on a Saturday, go to the bass department. I'd say probably at least one Saturday a month, if not like every week. Always remember seeing him in there. Lovely, lovely chap. Always bought a bass. Every time he came in, bought a bass. And the basses would range from like a couple of hundred quid to like something, you know, I would say like 1500 plus, but had a lot of basses. Wow. One day he bought an Epiphone like Thunderbird bass.
Right.
And then a week later, he was like, I need to return this bass. We're like, oh man, like what's wrong? You never return anything. Basically, he just bought a new bass this week. And he went, oh, I got home and realized I already owned one. And I was just like, fair enough. I'm like, are you sure?
I can't
you
really
don't
argue
want-
with that.
Sure you don't want to?
Please?
Please? Yeah. But I remember that. Which also, I think when we're in our guitar nerds chat, led on to the conversation about people buying stuff when they're drunk, which led on from your thing last week, Joe, in the bass breaker. I remember we had the Slash aged and signed Les Paul, which was £9,999, and someone bought it overnight. The next day was like, oh, you know, we've sold the Les Paul. And then someone phoned up like 9 o'clock sharp and was like, you know, oh no, I was drunk, didn't mean to buy it. Classic.
Yeah, well, did we ever sell that Slash?
Yeah, I can't remember if we talked about it on or off the pod, but I remember saying that the person I sold it to in the end, I gave him a free Gibson SG.
Oh, we did talk about this, yeah.
But it just, oh man, so many funny stories. But I remember there was a story once about a guy that came in, apparently on a Saturday. For those of you who don't know, GAC is like in the middle of the Brighton sort of lanes. There's lots of bars and pubs around. This guy came in on a Saturday. I don't think I was there. And he was like steaming drunk. And he bought a £5,000 acoustic guitar. And the guy who was working there at the time was like, you know, maybe it's best if I just, you know, don't take it with you now. Just leave it here. Come pick it up tomorrow. Go and enjoy the rest of your Saturday afternoon. And I think he paid cash and we were like, okay, we'll put the cash in the safe. Like, won't cash it. Like, this guy clearly doesn't realise that he's just spent £5,000 on an acoustic guitar. And we were like, he's never going to come back. And the next day he came back in looking like he's with a raging hangover, being like, I'd like to take that guitar for yesterday, please.
Oh, he took it. He took it.
Yeah, he came back the next day and took it.
Oh, wow. Did you even offer him a refund?
Oh, no, he just was like, I want that guitar I bought yesterday. I was like, okay, there you go.
Well, I wish I had enough money to purchase five damn things.
Imagine that. He's like, yeah, I want a guitar. The joys of... it was a good time. It was good times working in that shop. But yeah, definitely some funny stories like that.
It was, yes. It was the best times. Ah, good old GAC days.
Yeah. Although I've never owned, maybe Naomi or Joe, you've had this. I've never owned the same pedal twice at the same time, but I've definitely, too many times to count, bought pedals, sold them, and then bought them again because I'm like,
yes, oh my god, too many times to count. I think the most memorable one for me was a beautiful Aguilar, one of the super light cabs. I had the 112.
Yeah. Oh yeah, are they the ones that were really lovelily shaped, like they had a little corner,
they had almost like a piping on them as around well, the edge, right? Yeah, and yeah, beautiful in every way. And I think a pretty common rig for a long time was for people to have a Tone Hammer and two of the 112s as their rig. I just had one, but served me very well. And moving between projects, I needed a bigger cab. And to be fair, I needed the cash, but I had a feeling as I was selling it, I was like, I think I'm going to... No, I'm not going to regret this. No, it'll be fine. And picked up a 410 instead. But ever since I really have wanted a 112 once again. I did end up selling and rebuying my Tone Hammer 500.
Oh, I was going to say, because I don't know if I've ever had that happen.
The same unit. I mean,
I sold it and then
I do record my serials, but no, that would have been quite... not embarrassing, but quite funny, I suppose. But yeah, so Aguilar has been a come and go or through my gear time, and no problem with that. I'm probably going to rebuy the exact Reverend bass that I sold last year. That was the Mercalli 5. Yeah, it was a stunning bass. And I've no shame in rebuying the exact model again. I don't think there were any, there was anything about it that, I could fault enough to divert to something else in my repurchasing. I'm trying to think what else. I think all my other repurchases have been since.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your dollar a month trial today at shopify.com/records.
I've bought two synths twice. Yamaha Reface CS and an Alesis Ion, but that's been it. That's of no interest to anyone here, though, guys.
I think the Refaces are pretty cool, but at least they're not like super expensive.
Yeah.
I think that's always a thing when I've bought and sold gear, that the bigger regrets are the more expensive ones, because I know that I'm probably never going to afford to buy it again. Or like when I'm looking at it now, the value's gone up. It's like looking at a Custom Shop Esquire again. And I'm like, God, how did I have the money the first time, you know, secondhand? And then I've sold it. And I'm like, how am I going to afford it again? You know, it's just one of those things. You just like, you know, needs exactly. must at that time. But yeah, I think if I ever have kids and they get into playing guitar and I've just been like, just never, you know, never sell anything. You know, if you find yourself, you know, in hard times, we'll work it out.
You're getting one custom shop each, and that's it.
Yeah, but I think that's always the ones to me that have hit the hardest, the ones that are more expensive, because you sort of, you know, you're never going to buy that again.
Totally.
You know, pedals and some of the cheaper amps I can see, but it's like. Yeah, most of the time you're like, it's painful handing over that sometimes, going, I will never see you again.
I think,
or afford absolutely. It.
I think my mistake and the thing I've had to learn is just because a project is finished doesn't mean I'm done with certain specific items of gear forever. And, it's, you know, I think there's no harm popping them in the old gear cupboard for a year or two if needs be, because you'll probably find a use for them again.
There is there really is the risk of going the other way, the other end of this, as I have, where, you know, I own, what is it, like four jazz basses, four just vintage styled jazz basses, like three P basses. So how many Class D bass heads do I have? Like four? Plus like the two valve ones. I own two Ashdown ABM 600s, admittedly. One of them's, you know, I was given by Ashdown. But why do I have two? That's ridiculous. And if you don't ever sell anything, you end up like I am right now, which is crammed into the corner of a room that is otherwise completely filled with guitars. But on that note, you talking about your Mackalli 5 has made me think, and I was thinking about this earlier. I've never owned a Reverend guitar. I've only ever had them when we get them on loan. This is the year that I should buy a Reverend guitar, I think, because Matt, you've got the Matt West signature model.
Yes,
which
I have.
Is single P90 in the bridge. It's got a tremolo, gorgeous sort of offset. It's their Jetstream style body shape, but bound, and like the scratch plate is wonderfully Art Deco and very unusual. Has that bass cut additional control that Reverend pop on everything. I love the look of a single cream P90 in the bridge as well. That's wicked. And, you know, the fact they actually do it in kind of a forest green finish with a taut guard is their standard range. I know, Matt, you've got it in shell pink, obviously.
Yeah, it's foam shrimp pink. But actually, I did see the other day, you know, Reverend are great at doing this. Admittedly, I'm sort of more aware of the guitars than they may have done on basses, but they had effectively a run of Matt West guitars. I don't know whether it was specifically his signature, but definitely that body shape with one Railhammer humbucker in the bridge. And then they did like a blue sparkle and then a gold sparkle and then like a silver sparkle. I think there's like six each. And I was just like, oh man, they look so good. They look so good.
They did do the Mike Watt Plower Mark II in the sparkle gold finish as well. Cool. I think so there was a base alternative to that, but yeah, they're great at limited run finishes. I think it has to be a guitar rather than a bass for me. I think none of the basses have quite got what I'm looking for nailed, but you know, the guitars, obviously there are about 40 in their range.
I'm kind of surprised to hear that none of the basses have really done it for you. What's been the closest made you almost plump?
The Triad is the only one I think that would do what I nice. Want from okay. a bass. So the Triad, for you know, listeners, if you don't know, is their same body shape actually as the Matt West, obviously oversized for bass, and it has three bladed jazz bass pickups in it. So it will do very much that sort of jazz bass tone, but because there are three of them and you can have all three on, you can get that Burns Wild Dog sound, that Burns Bison tone as well, which is just really aggressive and honky. And of course, everything in between, just having, you know, three jazz style pickups makes it incredibly versatile. It's 34-inch scale. It's just very good. It's just very good. That's a great bass. But none of the other things for me really nailed it. I don't really like the look of Music Man-style pickups. They're very modern. And I love everything else about Reverend because they're very retro, modern-styled. But for me, those huge pickups, they're just not my vibe. And that counts. That discounts the Macaulay, the Thundergun.
The Dob King as well.
The Dub King, I think actually the Dub King is, I would say, the one for me if it didn't have those pickups because it's so cool and it retro. I've also been thinking about getting a Gretsch recently. It fits all of those things except those pickups seem just very at odds.
If I had to guess what Reverend you would go for, I would have said the Dub King, probably then the Watt Player, then the Triad.
Yeah, the Dub King's definitely. Yeah, you're right. I'm saying the Triad just because I think, if I got that, I'd actually play it. Whereas the Dub King, I'd get because it's incredibly cool, but I don't think I'd ever take it out because I just really don't like the look of the pickups. But it's very cool, and it has some fantastic finishes as well, the Dub King. But yeah, we'll see. With guitars, there's a bit more variety, I think. And it's annoying that you've got the Matt West, Matt, because that is happily my favorite one that they do, and I don't want to get the same thing as you, so
I do. It's one of those things, isn't it? It's like when you all first start playing guitar and your mate's already got the Ibanez RG7321, you're like, I can't have the same RG7321. I think we've talked about it before, but that was my mate's first guitar, and obviously we were all into like Korn and new metal at that point, but seven string is your first guitar. We're all just learning to play guitar, and you pick it up and you're like, wait, why does nothing sound right? I do know that feeling, and you never want to have the same exact same as someone else. It must be difficult in the world of math rock, Joe, when everyone's using orange amps and similar guitar pedals.
Yeah, it's well, I tell you what, recently Tim has retired his Electro Harmonix Pog 2 from his board for the simple reason that he's like, it's done him well, like it's, he's used it a lot for various things, but it's literally become the sound of math rock. It's just so predictable now. It's just such a, it's become the Les Paul and Marshall JCM of the math rock community.
It's quite a noble move, really. I mean, they're such a divisive topic. I feel like people love the Pog Toner. They absolutely, like, I've heard few remarks on pedal sounds quite as impassioned as those who hate Pogs.
Guitar Nerds are teaming up with Music Nomad. Since 2010, Music Nomad Equipment Care has been making premium and innovative guitar care products used and trusted every day by top guitar repair shops, guitar makers, and touring techs in over 40 countries. Pro quality but affordable, Music Nomad is also the go-to for countless guitar players around the globe to help guitars look, sound, and play their best. After 2 years of research and development, and in a collaboration with top guitar repair shops, Music Nomad has developed the Keep It Simple setup. They demystified the guitar setup process by developing innovative precision gauges and tools combined with step-by-step general guidelines anybody can follow and set up their guitar to play and sound great. With their KISS method and their gauges, you can check the vital areas of your guitar and use their toolkits to perform your own setups. They have a 24-page instructional booklet available in 7 languages, downloadable for free, loads of how-to videos, as well as complete setup video tutorials for popular brands such as Fender, Gibson, Taylor, PRS, and more. Not only is it fun, but a properly set up guitar takes your playing and sound to a whole new level. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com. Follow them on social media with @musicnomadcare and kiss your guitar with Music Nomad's Keep It Simple setup.
Yeah. I think I definitely changed, but I think early on, I loved it. It sounded so different, so new, so refreshing. It made all the sort of twiddly high bits that you get in math sound more pronounced, like nothing else that had come before. It was such a specific tone, and it suited the genre so well. But as I get older and more obsessed with vintage stuff, all that I can hear is how tacky it sounds.
It's very 2008 at this point.
Yes,
which is fine if you're happy to
that's
stay
it.
In that year, you know, forever in music.
Yeah.
But not all of us are, that's fine too.
I wonder if the Pog 2 is going to do the... it's going to do the same thing as Korn's bass tone.
Oh, man.
For just how undesirable that is in a few years. So we'll see. I'm happy with his
a noble move.
Choice, to be honest. Yes, exactly. But, you know, actually, to be honest, speaking about the genre, and Matt, you know, like seven strings, I was contacted today by Kerry Funnell. Do you know Kerry?
I do.
Naomi, I think,
yeah,
from No Violet. Yeah, exactly. She's a great bass player in the band No Violet, who are honestly one of my favourite like live bands to go and see. Just the incredible vocals that band have. Like nothing I've ever heard. They're one of my favourite live acts. You know, just small band who will just always impress you. But anyway, Kerry, the bass player in that band, is playing guitar in a couple of other bands at the moment, a couple of other projects. And she messaged me and was like, I need your help getting a new guitar amp. I need some advice on a new guitar amp because I'm in two different bands. One band, I'm playing a Jazzmaster. The other band, I'm playing an 8-string. And I need an amp that can cover those basses. Well, cover the, you know, not basses.
Pun not intended.
Yeah, no pun intended. So I was like, I can't think of a broader... You know, two more different things than the jangle of a Jazzmaster and then the full range of an 8-string guitar.
Without giving anything away, if it's
exactly.
if it's under wraps, do you know what genre she's going
no,
at
no,
with the
not
8
at all.
Strings?
I don't. She didn't mention. Well, she said that would be very high gain and heavy. Mm. You know, obviously, but you know, I don't know any more than that. She said lots of sort of jangly chords for the Jazzmaster band and some sort of lots of. Heavy, mostly finger tap stuff on the 8-string, but two wildly different things. She wants one amp. Gave me a good budget. She was like, "I've got around £800 to spend on it." I was like, "That's good." Because I was concerned she was going to be. You know, you often get it where people are like, "Yeah, and I have £300 to do this with." So, I was like,
show me your best.
£800 was a great. Exactly. £800 was a great budget. So, actually, before I tell you my choices, what do you think? Top of your head. Matt and Naomi, what would you suggest? Matt, do you want to go first?
So does the amp need to have two channels? So in the sense that if...
Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
right,
that's
okay.
Actually something she asked for as well. She would like... Well, no, she didn't say that. She said it would just... Actually, it doesn't, I guess, require two channels, but she wants to do drive through the amp. So it's... I guess that is, I wouldn't put that high on the list, but yes, if you could turn on and off some sign, you know, the switch between two channels, I guess that would be advantageous. She didn't mind if it was a combo or a head okay. and a cab. She kind of favored the idea of head and cab because I think she ends up, they end up supporting a lot. And so a head would be quite a convenient thing, but she didn't mind. And actually, I think three out of the four things I suggested were combos. Actually, no, two out of the four things were combos. So
and what was the budget again?
£800, of which on half of mine I came substantially under.
Okay, interesting. Ooh, that's tricky. £800.
£800. So, you know, just if you're going head and cab, just assume the cab's going to be 300-ish. You know, 400-ish. So the head's got to kind of be somewhere around that. She didn't mind it being a bit more. She wasn't fussed if it was a bit more. She wants the right product. But she was like, ideally, this is what I have to spend.
Okay.
If you need time to think, maybe, Naomi, what do you think?
When you said head and cab, that obviously it's a little more to fit into 800. But just going on head, I would have said something like the Quilter Overdrive. Are you guys familiar with them?
I'm not, no.
Is that solid state, right?
Did she stipulate that she's looking for hybrid or valve?
No,
oh, sure.
No,
yeah.
I was just like, I was just making sure I was
talking
about
you
the
are,
right thing.
You are.
I even checked if she was fussy about valves, and she absolutely isn't. She said she wants the right amplifier
okay, cool.
for the job.
So, yeah, Quilter, and particularly as a fellow sort of band on the move, wanting something to bring easily to gigs, Quilter is, as far as I know, it's sort of a one-man one-man company, or certainly a one-man designer, really small company who make amazing lightweight solid-state heads. They make the base block, Joe. I'm not sure if that's come on your radar before, the base block 800.
Yeah, they're honestly a brand that I've glossed over a lot just because I don't like the look of the logo.
Yes, I know very old school.
You know, mutual friend of... Yeah, exactly. I know mutual friend of ours, Naomi, mm-hmm. Joe Thorpe, loves a quilter. And I find myself often at odds with some of his amplifier choices. So I think maybe almost that's maybe not look at them. But these actually do look great. I never look at this
Right,
company.
So I don't know. I don't like to be biased towards gear first for anything other than its sound, but it is a great sounding head, any demo I've heard. 202 obviously is for its two channels. You've got a clean and a drive channel. Super simple controls. You literally have gain limit output on the drive channel and a super basic 3-band on the clean channel. There's a reverb on there as well. And it's a 200 watt, I believe, is it? Overdrive 200, yeah, 200 watt.
Yeah, it looks like it, yeah.
Three channels. So it's not obviously absolutely massive on power, but should still see you through most sort of smaller stage gigs, or would mic up really nicely with a cab. That comes in somewhere around 550 UK. So that would be my first vote for head, I would say.
Yeah, that's a really interesting unexpected choice, actually. I really wondered, because I thought my responses were quite standard, so I wondered how many would overlap, but that is not one I even thought of, and is a great option for something that will do clean mm-hmm. and drive really well, and with the added yes. bonus of being portable. Matt Knight, what do you think?
That is a really good choice, and something I hadn't thought about. If someone's going everywhere from 8-string to mm-hmm. Jazzmaster, I guess it would help if I knew some of the music so I could understand, because I started looking at things like some of the cheaper like PV, like EVH heads and things to cover the gainier side of stuff.
But then you're sacrificing on a Fender clean.
Exactly. So I wonder if this is just stealing Naomi's excellent thought of a pedal board based amplifier. Victory makes some of those kind of like preamp pedals. Obviously you've got like the Kraken, which is more high gain, and then you've got the Duchess, which is their kind of more Fendery type one, but the one in the middle is like the Jack, which is based on their V30, which is an incredibly popular amp head, and that does everywhere from a really good clean to more drive. You've got two channels. You've got the options of running effects in there as well. So if you're integrating it into a pedal board, you know, you could use things like, you know, reverb and stuff if you wanted to clean it up a little bit. Because I kind of like the idea, if I was approaching such radically different bands, but with one rig, that to me seems like the better way to go, because I think you'll get more flexibility than if you try and buy a head that covers a bit of everything.
That's a good point.
But otherwise, I don't know. I must admit, I'm kind of stuck, because, yeah, a lot of amps tend to go down the, you know, unless you go down a purely clean amp, and then you, for the heavier stuff with an 8-string, you do just use a drive pedal.
Yeah, this is it. I did mention to her, you know, that's obviously mm-hmm. the alternative option, but, you know, if she really wants to do everything in one box, you know, there are still some good things for her. Well, I mean, you'll be unsurprised to know that my suggestion, and whilst I gave her four things, I did lean heavily on this one. Unsurprisingly, was the Boss Katana Mark II 100 watt 212 combo. It's, you know, it's big, it's lightweight, it's affordable. The clean channel is great. Plus, now you've got those alternative voicings. You've got something maybe a bit more Fendery on that alternate voicing for the clean, which is gorgeous. And then you've got three other gain channels that you can switch between with a foot switch as well as having access to the effects, even if you don't want those. And I think it does both of those things very well, very cleanly. Certainly, it was one of the few I could speak from experience on, because where Polymath don't use 8-strings, Tim, who uses the Katana 100, does tune down to an A on his 6-string for some stuff, and the Katanas handle that very well, maintaining clarity and, you know, depth and It doesn't get muddy or muffled. They're very good at that. For goodness sake, he uses two of them because he has one set up as his drive amp and one that just has a sub running through it. So he uses it as like a bass amp that he just clicks on and off for, you know, big riffs and stuff. So, and as far as dealing with low tones, it's very good. And we know the cleans are very good, so it's going to be jangly enough for a jazz master. Plus, it's miles under her budget. So that for me was the main one. Other things I thought were worth looking into, very predictable choices by me, I guess, which was the Vox Night Train 50, the Orange Super Crush 100, and if she was looking to make a purchase from me, the Fender Bassbreaker 1830.
Second careful owner.
But you know, I thought those were other kind of reasonable ideas. I have to say, the only one of my ideas that I think is any good now is the Katana, because I think this Quilter is such a good shout. And you know, Matt, I think also maybe you're right. Maybe looking at something that's pedalboard integration. I honestly think she probably just wants something quite simple that's going to do both of those jobs. Mm.
Yeah, it's tricky. And you know, as a slight side note, talking of eight strings, the you know, quite possibly one of the best bands of all time, Meshuggah, launched the new single for their new album, and obviously they are the original heroes of the eight string. And man, you listen to that single and you're just like, no one comes close. Like, there's so many great players out there who play eight strings from all these wonderful, you know, brands and manufacturers, from sort of more, you know, bigger brands like Ibanez to more boutique stuff, and you're like, it's good, it's great playing, but no one comes close to that band in terms of just like the sheer sonics of that band. And I don't know about this record, and it'll be interesting to see when it comes out, but their last record to come out was the first one that they'd done, I think, since the early 90s, where it was real amps. Everything really? They did was all digital. It was all plugins. And it'll be interesting to see, because you listen to that and like sonically, you know, it does sound more like the last record, which is using more real amps. But I definitely think that I guess with eight strings as well, there's a lot of jazz players who play like eight or even 10 strings, and I have done for decades. And for that, I always think, you know, something like a big Fender Twin or a JC120, if you want the big clean and the boominess and the headroom, you know, cover all the frequencies, that's what you need. But then you totally sacrifice the drive side
of
things. You know. Yeah. But I always think a clean platform can be more driven, but a solely driven platform is difficult to get a solid clean sound out of.
Well, that's it. I think you're absolutely right. A very reasonable solution here is a great sounding clean amp and then a really good drive pedal, or a drive pedal that suits whatever she's trying to do. Nonetheless, okay. Well, those were some good suggestions. Now, Matt Knight, you've finished a pedal board this week.
Ah, I have. So I've got quite a busy. Well, so there's quite a busy month happening in my household at the moment, because we are not far away from my wedding, which means that last weekend Amy was away for this weekend she's away for a hen do. Last weekend she was away for a family get together. So I realized I dismantled my old big pedal board back in February last year, and just haven't touched it since, mainly because I've been playing a lot of Boss stuff and I've been demoing a lot of Boss stuff from home. But I was like, right, finally going to do it. And I've sort of been piecing it together slowly over the last like 3 months, like making sure that this time I'm going to make the neatest possible job and just wire it as cleanly as possible, to the point where I'm going, I can't change anything on this board because it will just like disrupt everything. Like all the cables are like, you know, as right angled as they can be and all of that. Because I was like, I just want a board that is kind of all my favorite go-to stuff that I leave. And then, like you said earlier, Joe, just got a bunch of pedals in boxes or on shelves and a pedal board with a power supply if you want to just hook stuff up really quickly. But yeah, finally finished this board and plugged in some pedals I haven't plugged in for ages. and just going, man, I forgot I had some great presets on here, or some great sounds. Mainly the Eventide H9.
You're still harping on about the H9.
I just love it.
I can't believe it's survived all this time. As in, I'm not criticizing it. I'm saying it was one of the first things to come out that had this, that was this elaborate, and it's really stood the test of time.
Absolutely.
You know, even now, like, you know, when we were doing Gear of the Year, and like Mikey Demas was talking about how the Helix is becoming a little bit old hat, and you know that Neural DSP is a, you know, that's the more modern one, that it's almost time to discontinue the Helix, you know. I'm like, oh god, is it that time already, you know? So I'm just surprised the H9 seems to have survived all of that. It's still something that people are absolutely happy with.
Yeah, and I think you can only really get the best out of it by having an external MIDI switcher, or, you know, you're just using it in the studio, because the actual user interface is terrible. You can't really edit anything on the you need to have the app connected to it and all of that stuff. But once you've got some presets in it, I mean, obviously you've got everything from the time factor, the mod factor, you know, you've got all of the kind of crazy reverb algorithms in it. And, you know, I was getting some great reverb and delay sounds. And then, you know, A, being that with things like the CXM, I'm like, this has got some amazing sounds in it. But the real winner for me is all of the pitch algorithms. And obviously, Eventide have made pitch products since the 1980s, and they have been the champion of that. But there's just some really cool effects on there that I'm like, you can't buy another pedal that does this.
Yeah.
You know, Eventide really do it the best. I mean, obviously you can buy Digitech for the whammy stuff, or, you know, Electro-Harmonix if you want the octave down stuff. But for kind of like, you know, rhythmic delays and pitches and stuff like that, there's just some great stuff in there for more ambient things. So that was really cool to kind of dive back into that. Finally, we talked about it with Mikey and Thorpe, but Deluxe Memory Man, still just working as long as I don't turn it on and off. it's absolutely fine. So yeah, it's a pretty extensive board that covers everything. Finally, talking about gear that we sold and then repurchased, I repurchased a Moog ring modulator.
Love those.
The original big box one.
Wow. Where did you find one of those? I guess they're just expensive.
They are about, and they are expensive. But I always, you know, say, as long as you you have your channels, be it Reverb or eBay or wherever, generally, I always go, sold. Have any sold within the last 6 months? And you'd be amazed at how many do actually sell. And then you actually do get a better idea of what they actually sell for. And then it's just a case of like a waiting game, and just being like waiting for someone who's desperate for the money and is just listing it at like, right, I just need to sell it now price, or just something that's like mislisted. But that the thing I always loved about that ring modulator is, one, obviously, Omar used it loads on the Mars Volta, so you can hear it all over Delaust and everything else. There's that sound to it. But it's one of the only ring modulators that goes slow enough to make a really good tremolo.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird.
And so good that it actually, for tremolo, I was using the Origin FX Revival Trem. But it's just totally wiped that off the board, because I'm like, I can have that and go from tremolo to ring modulator, you know, because quite often you're playing a swampy blues and then you've just ramp it up for that ring modulator solo in the middle. You know, I'm sure, you know, all the great blues guys, but BB King, you know, they would have all loved a ring modulator for those solos. So, yeah, it's been cool to dive into a bit of that. And the great thing about those is you can kind of like every control on the front can be controlled with an expression pedal, which is obviously madness. You could plug.
How many expression pedals have you plugged into it at once?
Well, funny you should say that. I think probably like two or three, but I only have 2 feet. So obviously you're doing a kind of like, I'm turning everything up at once here. But Moog did make 2 products that are quite rare that worked with those big box pedals, one of which was the CP251, which is basically a control processor. So it's a box that just sends out expression signals. And then you've just got like 16 outs. And then the idea is that you patch it into all of the big Moog pedals and it's like a control processor. But they did actually make a multi-out expression pedal for that series, which was basically it looked like a big Digitech Whammy that had four buttons on it and an expression pedal that had, I think, 4 or 8 CV outs that then would plug into those pedals.
This is ridiculous.
I'm loving this.
Then you would set presets. So you could have like presets and stuff, send out preset, like control voltages to all your pedals. Absolutely bananas. I think I had the chance to buy one once when I worked at GAC and never did. I was like, I never need one of those. And then you just can't find them. And when you do, they're just horrendously expensive. You can even, if you want to get weird, on the pedal itself, you can actually patch some of the outputs into some of the inputs. So you can kind of like make it express itself.
Right, of course. I mean,
Why wouldn't you want to do that? Most pedals have that, right?
Yeah,
you just, you know, go out from the, you know, the mix out into the, like, you know, frequency in, and when you turn the mix control up, it'll also change something else, you know. So very cool.
This is very cool. Sorry, carry on.
No, please, go.
I was going to say, you also got, there's another pedal that's coming to your range, which is something that I really want to get as well, because it is fantastic. Fantastic for bass, and I'm wondering how you're using it.
What, the ring modulator?
No, I'm talking about the Source Audio.
Yes. So for the last 3 weeks, we've gone, right, has anyone bought anything new to talk about? I'm like, no. And then I totally remembered that I actually did buy something new at Christmas, and literally didn't unbox it until I started building this pedal board this weekend. I bought a Source Audio Spectrum filter. So I'm a massive fan of auto-wah. Who isn't? Who loves a bit of funky auto-wah?
Who isn't? Auto-wah is the best.
I must admit, my love of the auto-wah has come on massively since getting really into Tom Misch, because it's just like this amazing sort of like neo-soul jazz stuff. And he's just got this amazing auto-wah sound. And I've really wanted to, you know, stick to my Boss roots and buy a Boss FT2 dynamic filter. But it's one of the rarest pedals we ever made. I think we only made 9,000. So just like, can't get one of them. But the thing I loved about the Source Audio is that it actually, dare I say, models some great auto-wahs like the Lovetone Meatball and the Mutron, which are two of my favorite auto-wahs. But it also models an OC2.
Ooh, what?
Yeah. Probably shouldn't say, but you know, dare I talk about it. But the great thing is that you can plug it in via USB, and then it's got a full-fledged editor. So it's got two internal voices, so like filter voices, which can be auto filters or phasers. Plus, it's got 10 different distortions, including fuzzes and octave fuzzes, and then you can have two different octaves, including one octave down, two octaves down, and one octave up. So you can have two of those running together. Or if you run stereo in and stereo out, you can have two different signals running in and out, which is pretty mad.
This does a lot more than I thought. This is incredible. I actually didn't know there was such a combining of effects in it. I want to get one
I think it's because
we finish recording.
I think it's because it's just digital. It's not analog. So I think there's a lot of their, you know, digital sound engine, a lot of stuff. Obviously, it probably doesn't take up a huge amount of DSP, I'm assuming. So they can afford to chuck a bit more stuff in there. You've got basically a switch on the front that, you know, all the controls on the front can be remapped if you want them to. But out of the box, you've got a couple of great auto-wahs, and then thrust, which is their like OC2 sound. And then you've got like a little button you can press at the top called Alt, and it gives you four different controls and four different presets. So, you know, easy, hands-on, very WYSIWYG, you know, what you see is what you get on it. It's nothing kind of too crazy. But then when you plug it in, obviously you've got all these mental options that you can go through. The only criticism is that you have got MIDI, but it has no MIDI ports, which is really annoying. So the only way to access some of the deeper MIDI functions is by using their proprietary Neuro Hub, which means you have to buy a whole other box that's designed to connect to lots of source audio pedals at once. Ah. Or you have to buy what the someone makes is called like a ghost converter, which basically takes a MIDI in and then sends a USB out in a much smaller box. I think Disaster Area Designs make that. But that's the only annoying thing. But I bought it knowing that I just wanted a couple of on-the-fly auto-wah sounds.
Yeah.
And that does that, and it does it really well. And some of the bass settings are just amazing. Because it's got a phaser in, you can have like auto wire and phaser with a bit of OC2, and it's just like, oh, it's this glorious, like vintage filter sound.
This sounds great. It's sub 200 quid as well. It's like, this is affordable for the amount of features they have crammed in there for something that's passed me by. I love the fact the new look of the Source Audio pedals, that you know, they just look retro and cool and simple, but having all this extra stuff under the hood as well. This is great. This is a great product. £180. Do I need a new auto wire?
I know I do.
Yeah.
I'll race you for one, Joe. Yeah, I think just to build on what you're saying there, Joe, it's a really good move for Source, who obviously have known what they're at with great digital sounds for so long, but the pedals just look a lot better now, don't they? They've finally moved away from the sort of neat Game but Boy. maybe 2000s-esque sort of look.
It was a very strange look. It was like, it was not something anyone ever wanted to have on a pedal board. It was really weird. They looked like kids' sort of handheld computer games. You know, the little ones you buy that might just have one racing game on them. It was a very weird aesthetic.
It's funny, isn't it? It's like brands like that definitely trying to push the boundaries of what a pedal could be at that point. And obviously everyone now is pretty much settled on like, you know, and no discredit to the people there's great people like Thorpe that are making their own ones, but most brands are buying an off-the-shelf like Hammond die-cast aluminium box, and that's fine because that's a thing you don't have to worry about. But obviously there's a lot of brands at that point going, we'll just make it look like this. And obviously they put huge emphasis on things like their hot hand controller, if you remember that, which was the ring that you put on your finger. Yes. And then obviously and then when dubstep was a massive thing and we were all into Skrillex, you know, obviously they were like, oh, you can make all these great, sort of like dub sounds and things like that. And it's just like, oh yeah, it's great, I really want to do that. And then obviously totally impractical. However, they still do make the hot hand and it does work with the Spectrum filter. So now I'm like, now I'm a bit older, you know, 20 years has passed. Maybe I do want to put a ring on my finger and then use it as an auto wire. Maybe that's something for the wedding, Joe. There's some surprise of the
instead of saying vows, you could do some sort of hot hand solo.
Yeah, just some sort of incredible bass solo. Just like that would be amazing. Absolutely amazing. But it's a great pedal. I still have the OC2 on my board because, you know, special place in my heart, that pedal. I love that thing. And another pedal that I bought, sold to Joe, and then bought again because
I retired mine from my pedal board, my OC2, recently because I wasn't really using it. And to be honest, even the OC2, as wonderful as it is, it really struggles in the sort of tunings that Polymath are in.
Oh, I can imagine, yeah.
It's great. It's just, I just have to be very careful where I use it to make sure I don't go below a certain few notes, you know, to... So it's tough to find the right place for it. And I was just like, oh, I'm just not using it enough. I love it. Like it's a great sound. I almost didn't want it on my touring board, you know, in case anything happened to it for the little amount I was using it. Are you still using the OC5?
I am. Yeah. Not in any active project just yet, but in my own noodlings, I am.
Yeah, it's tricky to find application for that.
Yeah,
sort of thing.
I feel like quite a lot of bassists, discover the OC 2, 3, or I suppose now the 5, and think, oh my God, this is the artistic answer to all of my bass playing forever. And, you know, it's a really fantastic effect. I absolutely love octave, but I do think it should be used. Should be used with care in the mix. You know, it's not worth masking your guitarist or losing yourself in the mix by kind of rushing hastily into it. I say that as if I'm some sort of wise, seasoned octave pedal user. I just adore the OC sound. And sadly, in the new punk project, which isn't even mine, I haven't been allowed to engage it just yet. So but we'll see. Bear with me. I might report back differently in a few months.
Oh, well, yes, I would look forward to it. Definitely octave bass on punk stuff. I want to hear it. So we got a new guitar last week. I said I'd talk about this week, and we've sort of gone off on one this week. Haven't done any of the news that I talked about.
It's always a good pod when you don't do any news.
Yeah, exactly. But I want to talk about a guitar that I got sent. So a while ago, I mentioned this actually on last week's Patreon, but, you know, I want to talk about it in more detail on the podcast. A while ago, I think we had Blake over on an episode. Blake Weiland from the Tone Mob and Chasing Tone came over on and did an episode with us on Guitar Nerds. And I asked him about, like, what thing has he discovered recently that he's super excited about? And he said Grez guitars. And he spoke so... For a guy who sees as much, if not probably more gear than we do... he was so excited, so enthusiastic about this brand that, you know, it had to grab my attention. And I think we reached out I've forgotten his first name. Grez, I'm going to look at Barry. There we go. Yes. I reached out to Barry Grez and just said, look, we spoke about you on this episode. Your stuff's really cool. And it's a relatively small US custom shop. He makes some fantastic guitars, and, you know, they're very much a little US custom shop. So I wasn't expecting to get anything for us to do anything with over here. But he got back in touch with me recently. He was like, oh, there's actually one of my Mendocinos in the UK at the moment, if you want to have a butcher's at it. So I said yes, and he sorted it out, and that turned up the other day. If you go on to the grezguitars.com website, and you look up the Mendocino, it's very much the one, it's the demo unit that's in all the videos. So that's been knocking around for a long time, for years, since he built this guitar. So that's obviously been doing the rounds through sort of, you know, reviewers and stuff like that. And it's finally made it here. And he's like, just be aware, it's something I made a while ago, and it's quite worn, you know, it's really been on the track. So just be aware. And he was like, I think the fella who had it before maybe strung it up with some heavy strings or something. I was like, that's fine, I don't mind. And it turned up, and it's been played hard, you know, for something that's so lovely. And I was, but it turned up, yeah, yeah, exactly. But it turned up with 12s tuned half a step down. And I was like, this is the greatest. It was already, like, that's my biggest problem when stuff turns up. I'm like, this is really cool, but I can't really have fun playing it until I change the strings, because these are all sort of weird and wimpy, sloppy strings that just sort of fret out all over the place. And you always have to then, you know, if you really want to play something properly, I've got to then put real strings on it. And then if I've got to send it off to someone else afterwards, I have to undo all that because people, I can't play 12s, I have weak hands. You know, so there's always a lot of effort for me with demo pieces that we get. So the fact that it came with 12s, I was very excited about that. That already made me overly enthusiastic. But gorgeous Lola gold foils, just a pair of gold foils in there. These lovely simple wood volume and tone controls. It's a kind of a Gretsch-esque single cut hollow body. It's 5 pounds in weight, which I loved. It was so lightweight and so playable. It had this gorgeous hollow tone, that sort of that mid presence, but with that space in the sound. It was just, it sounded like old blues, you know, just unplugged, you know, as well as
no ring modulator.
Good.
Terrible.
Yeah, exactly. Gorgeous headstock, like original headstock, still traditional, but with his own edge. Everything about it was just... It's very understated, very simple, but just really, really well done. I put a little video of it on the Guitar Nerds Instagram, dear listener, so do check it out. But I can't get enough of this guitar. It's so good.
I would also just like to point out that Barry, did you say his name was, from Gress Guitars, looks like he should be in Reservoir Dogs. He looks like one of the coolest dudes on the planet. He's got like slicked back, like slightly grey hair. He's got like a denim jacket on. I'm just like, man, that guy needs to be in a Tarantino movie. It's amazing. I think these guitars are very, they look very cool. I mean, on his website, there's a Mendocino in black, which I guess is the not, there's a baritone one, which is in the natural color, which is the same as the one you've got, Joe. But the one in black, I think, looks extremely cool. I'm in. I think I also had to find out what Mendocino was or where Mendocino is. It's in Northern California for anyone in the UK. I wasn't sure. They also make a junior version, which looks cool as well.
Ah, what's the difference with the junior version?
It's just a single pickup,
isn't
it?
It's just a single pickup.
Is it a slightly different body shape? It's not bound as well. There's beautiful binding.
I think it's a bit more stripped back, isn't it?
Sure. I was pretty bowled over by it. I'm not sure if I'd heard any, or at least many, semi-hollow bodies before. But as we were chatting about Reverend earlier, who are obviously an all Carina company, I'm a huge fan of the mahogany family genre, whatever the correct term is, of tone woods.
Tone wood.
And yeah, I just think it has really stunning low mids and lows in the tone. I used to be a huge fan of all of the sort of all mahogany sort of Guild acoustics. And then the kind of Alcoa Taylors that you can get. And I'm not sure if this was the case on any of those, but on the Mendocino, I see it's as many one-piece bodies as they can make as well, which is pretty amazing. The neck, I think, is all one-piece mahogany as well.
It's very cool. Everything about it's cool. Also, for the natural one, $2,900, which is, really not bad when you compare it to, to sort of how much a Gretsch, for example. It's annoying to compare it to that, but they are similar. That's a fantastic price for that. I really like the by the way, you can also have an LR Bags piezo or piezo for the US folks, a bridge pickup and blend system installed into the Mendocino, which is very, very cool. And also, I found on their website there is a video of the Mendocino with humbuckers and 12 gauge flat wounds.
Wow. Okay,
that's
tone
that is tone. That is my guitar right there. That is they're very cool.
I don't know if you saw this on their website. I was just having a look. They've got a tab called Custom Shop, always worth having a click on. They made a bass, or they can make a bass, but they made one before the CRB 15, which is a 15.25-inch semi-hollow bass, fretless bass.
That has Jay Branton written.
Where did you find this?
On their website, under Custom.
Oh, there you are.
And Custom. Under Archtop.
Custom Archtop.
Although he's saying 30-inch scale fretless, I don't know what I'm missing there. Yeah. Is it just it's the body, 15.25 semi-hollow body. Oh, right, okay, it's the body size.
Yeah.
Because it looks like a really tiny neck.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. It looks incredible. And he said it's only $3,100.
There you go, Joe.
I build bases like this in a variety of sizes and depths.
Oh no. What have you done?
Oh no.
It's beautiful looking.
Awesome.
I work for the credit card company that Joe Branton applies for all his credit cards. I just approve him, and then sort of just works in my favor. Exactly.
It's just all credit card companies because I have one of all of them. but it'll be fine. I'm going to die before I pay them back. But I am very excited by that.
That's cool.
That looks extremely cool. Wow. Well, there you go. Dear listener, go and check out Gress Guitars because they are absolutely stonking. I really love them. But we've actually run out of time, dear listener. That is all the time we have for this week. We're going to head over to Patreon. We're going to try and do some of the news over on the Patreon special episode because we've done none of it.
We'll do some of the quirky news.
We'll do some quirky news over on the Patreon. And dear listener, if you want to join us, you can. You can support us on Patreon, which really helps me out, as this is my job. You can support us for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you get the episodes ad free and early each week. $5 gets you access to our Patreon special episodes and the whole like back catalog, all our mini series, things like that. $10 gets you the lot, plus I'll sing you my thanks in a song at the end of every episode. But you know, I've been doing this song thing for a while. I used to do the names in one breath. I feel like it needs a new thing, so I'm open to suggestions, dear listeners. I want your suggestions. What else should I do? What else would you like? Maybe $10 tier Patreon backers suggest what you would like, within reason, and I'll do it. But yes, you can find us on all your favourite social media platforms. Join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. That's fun. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Daniel Walker, Ben Harder, John Brown, Holly Simpson, John Conaway, Eric Vaughan, Russell Healing, Paul Drew, Peter Blair, Ty Allen, Yogi the Guitarist, Kyle Harris, Joe Hart, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Shane Molloy, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Eisler, Gavin Van der Linden, Andy Manley, Robert Butterworth, Scott Utterly, Marcus Alkanowaki, Simon Milbourne, Stuart Robson, Christian Van Hansen, Keith Adams, Eric File, Jack Cutmore, Joe Buttick, Store, Abe Matthews, Ken Sayers, Kytopia the Man, John Anglin, Ross Edwards, Stephen Bourne, Aaron Sherman, Dave Lee, Jake Gray, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Losek, Derek Rich, Blake Wyland, Rob Norvig, Shady Short, Steve Merkel, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Robin Smith, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, and Moon Glamour.